Intervju Radija Študent.
Lep pozdrav v Eriš intervjuju. Danes večer se v klubu K4 začenja nova sezona v okviru tega dogodka nocoj. Bo pop torej domačih DJ-jih nastopil tudi legenda britanske elektronike Luke Vibert, ki ga nekateri mogoče poznate tudi pod pseudonimi Wagon Christ, Plug, Carrier District, Eamon Andrews, Days of Clubs in še kar nekaj teh pseudonimov je bilo. Vsem tem se bomo z Lukom pogovarjali. Torej v intervjuju za začetek bomo slišali pa malček njegovega komada I Love Acid. I love acid for the way it makes me move. I love acid, it's the sound you can't improve. I love acid, get inside this nasty groove. I love acid, acid, acid. I love acid, going round and round and round. I love acid, going in and up and down. I love acid, get inside this fleshy sound. I love acid, acid, acid. I love acid, with a dirty kick-ass beat. I love acid, move your mind, move your feet. I love acid, get inside, feel this beat. Zdaj imamo tukaj le zraven Luka Vibrata. Hi Luke.
Hi there.
Hi. You were just saying that this track that we are listening to now still in the background, that you made it actually 20 years ago, although it was released a bit later.
Almost exactly. I got my 303, the acid synthesizer in it, in June or July 1998, and then that was one of the first tracks I made, so probably August 98, so it's like, ooh, just 20 years.
you said you were saving it for like a special occasion. Do you know when you have a track that kind of stands out?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because same for other friends of mine who make music, Aphex, Square Pusher, we often save our favorite tracks and for something special that never happens, and so actually they end up being unreleased, and then we shout at each other like, you never released that track. But yeah,
but I think Joseph, the album that this track was on, was pretty special, so
yeah,
it was the right occasion.
Exactly, thank you. That time it worked.
This was the first album you put out on Warp.
The only one. I'd done remixes for them and things, some compilations I think I'm on Warp, but yeah, that was the only album. And I did try and give them another album about 5 years after, but all the people had changed. My guy wasn't there anymore. They said they liked it, but nothing ever happened. So.
In the beginning, when I did the introduction, I said that you're playing in a club, and this club is entering its 30th season.
Brilliant.
30 years since it's been opened, which is almost as much as you've been making music, right?
I started DJing 1989, so really close now to 30 years, but yeah, music maybe 90, but just very playing around, and then 91 when we started to get more kind of serious.
So 89 you started DJing?
Yeah, I was kind of DJ first.
Cornwall, right?
Yeah, just in like pubs and, you know, local.
Because I was going to ask you, what was the scene or what were those early raves like?
Yeah, I mean, those weren't raves. That was, for a while, it was really tough and people would just like shout at me, what are you playing? What is this music? And do you have any Led Zeppelin or, you know, Rolling Stones? And you said, no. And what? You don't have Rolling Stones? What's wrong with you? You know, it was all just kind of rock guys and there really wasn't a dance scene at all in Cornwall. So me, Aphex and our friends just had to make one. And then we started like 1990, maybe 91, doing the illegal. We just, luckily Cornwall was kind of big empty county, so we just find an empty house, get some speakers and, you know, have a party there, and the police would turn up a few hours later, but they were really cool. They'd just say, everything all right? Okay, be good, or whatever. And that was when it sort of started.
How many people were attending?
Sometimes a few thousand, but that was like 92, maybe by summer 92. Quite a few people were coming. Yeah, two or 3,000.
To London.
94.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you said you were playing first in pubs, what type of music was it?
Whatever the dance music I could get at the time, a bit of Detroit stuff, a bit of acid, early kind of breakbeat sort of stuff, like, or maybe more slightly more electro, breaky kind of stuff, like. What was the classic? There was a good Miami bass record, and there was a mix on the other side with like crazy breakbeats. It's kind of like the first ever rave breakbeat track, 1989. And I was really lucky I bought that in Exeter, which is a bit bigger than Cornwall, the kind of next county along.
Mm-hmm. You know, I got to this radio station about 10 years ago, and at that time, there was very few electronic albums. There were some of yours in between.
Cool.
But it was mostly like jazz, rock, punk music.
Yeah.
And I read in Wikipedia, it says that you were actually in a punk band.
Yes, I loved it. Yeah, I didn't ever really particularly like punk music. I actually liked Prince and Michael Jackson and hip-hop and kind of pop music. But
you were playing an instrument in that
band. Yeah. First bass, really badly, just dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, just as fast as I could play. And what single note, kind of very simple, and then drums, but that was too hard, so I couldn't do the punk drums. It was just too fast for me.
Do you remember what was the occasion when you got turned on onto electronic music?
Yeah, it was kind of, I was lucky growing up in the 80s, and I mean it would be the same now, like everything's kind of electronic now, but that was the first time really when most of the music was, or at least lots of the music was all electronic, so I think that was always in me anyway.
Because I know synth-pop was really big in the 80s, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Throughout England.
Yeah, even like Kraftwerk, you know, we were lucky, they had loads of hits in England, so as far as I was concerned, it was just pop music, you know, and I liked it, but I was lucky with my dad as well, because he was pretty cool, so he had some early-ish hip-hop records like The Message and sort of 1982, 83, 84. So, yeah, I'd always liked hip-hop, but again, I just thought that was pop music, just another part of pop. And then I went to a certain school and all the kids there were into kind of heavy metal and hard punk and all this kind of stuff. And
this was the same school where you met Aphex?
No. It was before that school. I didn't meet Aphex till I was 17, but this was like 11 to 15 or whatever. And they all liked terrible music and they thought I liked terrible music, you know, and they'd say to me, you're listening to music with electronic hand claps in it, you know, and they just couldn't get their head around it because they liked what they thought of as real music, you know, with guitars and bass. But yeah, I never had a problem with electronic textures. But actually, it was when I was working, helping my sister out in a pub, and she was like 17 and I was 15. And they played dance music, 1987, 88. And after a few weeks working there, I was like, shit, I really like some of this music. At first, I thought this is all quite cheesy music, but I didn't mind it. But it was just kind of dance music, early house music and stuff. And then after a couple of weeks, I think, I recognise this song. Oh, I quite like that riff. Oh, that's a good drum beat. And then slowly, I just got into it. So I think I was lucky to work in that. I was just making sure that no people came in through a back door, and I was totally illegally working. But yeah, very lucky, really.
Did you feel time stop for a bit today? Because the new EP of Aphex Twin came out.
No, I didn't know.
It's always a big deal when you put something new out.
Yeah, it was funny. I just came back from America, and every place I went to, they were saying, Aphex. I was like, what's happening? Because I've seen the video thing, but I still haven't heard the EP, because I've been travelling around all the time, and I don't go on the internet much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you did back-to-back DJ tours.
Yeah.
Several tours, right?
Yeah.
That was in Australia.
Yeah, I think the first one was in Belgium, and then a couple of others, and then we did an actual tour, which was only Australia, and that was quite hard work, right?
Mm-hmm. But let's go back to when you started producing. The first record you put out was with Jeremy, is it Simmons or Simmons?
Yep, Simmons.
Mm-hmm. You know, were you producing solo in the beginning?
No,
before you met Jeremy,
no, funnily enough, no. Together? No, I only, yeah, that was another school thing where I left the boys' school that my parents had sent me to, which was a horrible boys' boarding school where you had to like live in the school, and they finally let me leave when I was 15, and then I went to a normal school where you go in every day, and then met Jeremy Simmons, and for some reason he had a four-track tape recorder. He wasn't a musician at all and didn't have any instruments, but he'd had a few £100 because he'd spent summer working doing washing up, and thought, I'm going to buy a four-track and make strange experiments in sound. And he was always much more experimental than me, and kind of...
He actually put one of my favourite records on Reflex.
I love that shit. We had to really persuade him to put that out. He didn't want to release it.
Is he still making music?
No, that was all old stuff. Yeah, he stopped. Like mid-90s, he stopped. He hasn't done anything since then. It's a shame.
But then when you put out your first solo record, as Wagon Christ, after that, it was still, the sound aesthetics was still kind of a bit similar to the one you did with Jeremy.
A little, but yeah, not so much. I probably just tried to carry on a similar vibe, but I really couldn't do the same thing without him. So I went more to like breakbeats and things that...
You know, especially track Dances with Francis, the last one on that record.
Yeah, I always thought that was a bit more Aphex-y, maybe.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of that early artificial intelligence sound really into.
Yeah, I mean, that album was me trying to be somebody I wasn't really, because they wouldn't release my music, Rising High, as it was. They said the only album... I mean, they would on an EP. I did an EP for them, which was just whatever tracks I liked best at the time, the Sunset Boulevard EP. And then... But I wanted to do an album, because that's how you make money and whatever, sell more copies, so... Mm-hmm. And they said they'd only release an ambient album, because that was all they were selling at the time, so I had to be part of their ambient series, and I'd never made ambient music. So that's actually, that first album, Fat Lab Nightmare, is just me, like, is this ambient? Having a go, trying to be ambient.
Right, but then soon after that, you kind of moved on to more sample-based music.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always done that, so to be fair, I tried to do it. Like a bit step by step. First I put out a Red EP, which was a almost mixture of like the Fat Lab Nightmare and then the things coming after, Throbbing Pouch, and then I put Throbbing Pouch, and then it was like I could slowly start to do what I wanted to do, but I was a bit restricted because I was on a kind of ambient techno label, and I didn't really make ambient techno, but I was just happy to have any music released at that point.
Did you actually, at that time, did you just go into the studio and start working and whatever came out, or did you really thought out what you wanted?
No.
You were talking a bit about that they wanted an ambient album, so they went
exactly.
In that direction, tried to do that.
Yeah.
But later on, you just got in the studio and started...
Often just a sample, like that's the most common way I'd start, so I'd buy loads of old records anyway, another passion of mine, and I'll think, oh God, I've got to sample this, whatever it is, whether it's drums or just a chord or God knows what, a vocal, anything. So that's usually the trigger for me, if I have a trigger. Otherwise, I just start playing around with 303, drum machine, whatever. But yeah, I never have any idea before, really, unless I have to, like... ambient thing, or sometimes a remix, you know, you're doing a remix and you're like, okay, it's got to be a bit like this track or whatever. But if I'm just doing a track for me, I have no idea, which is my favorite way to be.
But still, I mean, I read in some interview you actually said that you don't ever plan out albums, that you're just making tracks. Yeah. But I think, I mean, there are plenty of your albums that are really coherent, you know.
Cool.
So I imagine when you have several tracks, then you start building around those and thinking in terms of let's make this into an album.
Not so much, no. It's the in nearly, I can't think of a case where I've done it myself. It's nearly always the label guy, like Mike at Planet Mu or James Lavelle at Mo Wax. And Mo Wax took ages, like 2 years. I was playing him tracks and he was really selective. And I'd go in about every month, every other month, playing like 30 tracks, however many I'd done. He'd say things like, yeah, it's getting closer. Yeah, and I'd say, you don't want any of these? No, don't want any of these. And it took 2 years. So he really, like, you know, we'd say A&R'd that album and picked it all, you know, and I was just like, oh, come on.
you actually put out a record with Mike Pardinas, right?
Yeah, a few. Not like working together, but mm-hmm. Yeah, on his label. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a few.
On his label, I don't know, but I thought that you had like a project together.
Not really, no. We did one track once in the 90s for a compilation, like it was a friend of ours, Sammy something from... Mm-hmm. From.
How did you meet Mike?
Through Reflex. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first, even before they released his stuff, like a year or two before, he was sending them tapes, and I was their friend from school, like the guy who set up Reflex Grant, went to that horrible boys' school I was talking about, so I did know Grant from like years before, and I used to bump into him in record shops once I'd left that school, and so we actually like kept up being friends. One day he came into the record shop I worked in like 1990 maybe, and said, I'm starting a record label. With Aphex Twin, do you want to give me some tracks or anything? You know, so I was lucky. I was from the beginning. I knew him, but yeah, Mike just used to send tapes in, and we used to laugh at them. To be fair, like because they were funny, but then he got better and better.
it's nice to see that Planet Mu is doing really well, especially after Reflex kind of went
disappeared,
out of,
man. Yeah, I know.
And it didn't look good for independent labels,
no.
But then Planet Mu really became quite big.
I don't know how he does it.
Years.
But yeah, he does really well, Mike.
He puts out really interesting stuff.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've got a new one coming soon. I don't know what's happened to him. He's gone very quiet.
Oh, Planet Mu?
Yeah, like 2 or 3 months ago, he said, okay, I've chosen all the songs. And again, he surprised me. It was like, wow, some of them are like 10 years old songs, but because he hears most of the songs I do. So in that case, he just says, oh, I want to pick these out. And I say, oh, okay, I'll find the WAV for you. And it's that simple.
It seems that you're always working on music. I mean,
saying
how much tracks you have.
Yeah,
you know, I recently made an interview with Otakar, and I asked him, because they were around for about as long as you, asked them where they find motivation nowadays for, you know, making music.
Yeah.
Where do you find motivation? They said basically there isn't much music that we're into.
So we have to make our own.
Yeah,
I think it's partly that, yeah. But I just go mad if I don't. Like, everybody tells me, whether it's my sister, my children, my girlfriend, like, they know when I haven't made music for a few days, and they'll say, go and make some music, because I just start getting kind of stressed and tense. It's just something I have to do, like, to relax. I have to kind of lose myself in making music. Mm. And it might be shit, you know, I don't mind, like, I feel a bit sorry for other friends of mine, like, more successful, even Aphex and those guys, and they feel more pressure. I don't feel any pressure, like, I just keep making tracks, and
maybe
some of them are good and some of them aren't.
Do you think that's maybe a benefit, one of the benefits of putting records on so many different labels, because you put out stuff on, as you said, Planet Mu, Warp, Ninja Tune, really big independent labels. Do you think that's one of the benefits, that you don't get any pressure?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe if I'd be lost with like only one label, that would be really hard.
Mm-hmm. You know, they reminded us we will have to end soon, because
cool.
We have some other program. Unfortunately, it went by.
What? It's not just me.
So maybe just a couple of questions about the gig you're doing tonight. It seems that, you know, this ravey acid sound is sort of coming back, right, in the recent years. Do you notice that?
The
younger people
I mean,
maybe are really into
definitely acid-y. Yeah, I really noticed the acid, yeah. Almost every show I did in America, the people playing before me were doing live stuff, and they had maybe not a 303 original one, but like a new copy or whatever. And it was all acid. It was crazy.
When did you have this tour in America?
Just finished 29th of August, like 10 dates in America.
How big venues were this?
Not so big. Really quite nice. 200, 300. I think 500 was like the biggest, but really nice small ones.
I talked to Otakar when they came back from America. It said that it quite improved since the last time they were there about 10 years ago.
Exactly.
The
same for me.
Music became really big.
It had kind of died 10 years ago, and you couldn't get a gig unless you were like Aphex or whatever. But yeah, I couldn't get a gig the last 10 years, and now suddenly everybody's interested again.
You usually don't plan what you're going to play on stage, right?
No idea.
It's the same today.
Same. I see what the guy played before me, and then I choose my first song, and then I see how that goes down. Number two, it's just like that all the way through.
but you have some tracks that always kind of work in any situation.
Well, I think I sort of tend to get into a certain zone, whether it's acid or jungle or whatever it is, and then I think, this track, like LFO or some classic Aphex track or something, and suddenly that pops in my head, like, I've got to play that now because it's popped in my head. Sorry, microphone. And
so now we really have to finish. Thanks a lot, for...
Cool, man.
This was your first time. Actually, this is your first time in Slovenia.
It is. Yeah, it is. I'm excited. Happy. Seems nice.
Great. Thanks a lot again. Tole bi torej Luke Weibert danes večer nastop na odprtju nove sezone v klubu K4, tako da če vas zanima, evo, kaj bo v svojem setu pokazal, pridite danes večer v Štirko. Intervju z njim sem pripravil Goran Kompoš. Lep pozdrav.
Intervju Radija Študent.